And it's Thursday, June the 27th, in the year of our Lord, 2013, for our Ruminations Thursday, Law and Gospel. And as you well know, on Ruminations, we always like to have an individual with us, and we have with us the Reverend Wes Reimnitz. Hi, Wes. Wes, are you on?
Yes, I'm on.
Oh, okay. Hello? All right. You can hear me? I can hear you.
You can hear me.
Yes. Okay. Well, this is kind of new. We've got a new studio, and there's different knobs to push up, push down, and we're having a lot of fun. But it's not as complicated as the Supreme Court ruling, is it?
Oh, I'm trying to wade through that, yeah.
Well, that's what we're going to be talking about. Yesterday, we had a Mrs. Carner on with us, who is part of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in analyzing a gay marriage and also talking to life issues. And she gave some real clear understanding of the Supreme Court ruling. What I find so amazing when I'm listening to, well, media, what she was saying and what they are saying are not often the same. Do you find that?
Yeah, quite often it works out that way. We found that out with the Boy Scouts.
Yes, we sure did with the Boy Scouts. And also with the Supreme Court ruling, for example, Justice Kennedy, in his ruling with a majority, did indicate that even if you got married in a state that allows gay marriage, but then you move to another state that does not allow gay marriage, you will not be considered married in that state. And there were a number of other things.
You know what that means?
No.
In Illinois, we wouldn't recognize a gay marriage.
Well, you just went through a pretty interesting time, didn't you?
Right. They tried to get it through, and they couldn't get the votes together, and it failed to pass.
That's correct. And a part of that was because some of your individuals there did not want to have kids growing up without a father and a mother.
Exactly.
Well, we want to talk of the theological implications of the Supreme Court ruling that talk about marriage that can be between two people of the same gender rather than male or female. Can you help us a little bit from a biblical point of view as to how God thinks about that?
It's interesting because I know on KFUO the last few days that they've been discussing it, and they've talked about it from marriage and the order of creation and how God had set up that whole instances. In fact, you and I had talked about it on the telephone, and I like one of your big quotes. God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. And yeah. I think that says it, you know, pretty much in a focal point, how God created and ordered all things together.
In other words, when we talk about the orders of creation, we can argue this on the basis of natural law also, but I make a distinction between natural law, where you don't need the Bible, and the orders of creation, where you sometimes do. Now, on physical items like gravity, the speed of light, you don't need the Bible to figure that out. For example, the orders of creation are such that if you jump out of a three-story window, you're not going to just hover there in the air. You're going to fall to the ground because of gravity. But the orders of creation also God put in place in the area of morality. And we saw what happened to, for example, the people in Noah's day and Sodom and Gomorrah and the people at the Tower of Babel.
Exactly. I like your system of talking about the order of creation, not just only in terms of the physical, but the spiritual side of things. You know, it was rather interesting in researching this. I came across a document that was translated by Matthew Harrison, The Social Doctrine of the Augsburg Confession by Hermann Sasse.
What does he say in there that's important for us today?
What is really, I thought was key and central to that is that when it comes to government, it belongs in the order of creation and not in the spiritual side. So we have a corrupt world as a result of sin entering into it, and Sasse goes into talking about that. And as a result, we can have that with government. Governments may not necessarily be Christian, but they're set up as an ordered state that God has ordained. And we need to realize that.
In fact, I think a lot of people do not recognize the fact that even in the United States, a pastor, just because he's a pastor, does not have a right to officiate at marriage to make it legal. You have to meet the requirements of the state. And in fact, pastors that do legal marriages are considered as civil servants. For example, here in the United States, there was a time in Missouri that if you were not a citizen of the United States, it didn't even matter if you were a pastor, you were not able to do marriages. And I remember when I was in Michigan, the only pastors that could do marriages in Michigan were those who were residents of Michigan. So a pastor from Ohio could not do that. And I think you had a similar experience?
Yes, I did. There was a time over in Missouri I couldn't, back in the 80s, marry my cousin to her fiancé because I was not a resident of the state, and I had to have a fellow Missouri Synod Lutheran pastor there who did the vows.
That really became apparent to me when I had the privilege of doing a class on law and gospel in Novosibirsk, Siberia. As I did the class, I spoke English, and then everything was translated into Russian for the seminary students. But there was a seminary student who was married, of course, to a woman for 6 months because they got married in the church, but they were not considered legally married because at that time, and I think it's still the same now, they had to also be part of an officiation where a state personality was conducting the ceremony. And I remember while I was there, the whole group, we went over, the married couple, and they got officially married by the state. And it really helped to remind me that the rules for marriage are made up by the state, but that doesn't mean you can still go contrary to the Bible in saying who can be married. And that's where we're having the problem today. Is that not correct?
I would agree with you. I would even maybe go so far as to say that there may be a time when we as pastors would have to turn down a wedding and have our license yanked by the state in terms of marrying people. And we would have to send them to a justice of the peace to get married and then come to the church and have a Christian wedding inside the marriage, but had two separate ones, just like you saw in Novosibirsk.
I think part of what the Supreme Court did is give more power to the states to make some of these decisions, which is going to be helpful in the pro-life movement, and we'll talk about that another time. But at this point, it could be possible that a state would take away the license for a pastor to marry if he refuses to marry a gay couple. And then your solution, as you just indicated, is, well, go ahead and have the secular ceremony to be officially married, like by a justice of the peace. And they won't insist that you be religious there because justice of the peace is also marry atheists. So there's not going to be a religious component. But then perhaps that same day you'd come over to the church to have it blessed. And if I'm not mistaken, that was kind of how it happened in Martin Luther's day in the 15th century. Did you read anything that Luther has on this?
I was trying to find that, and that one still. But I remember picking out of my American edition of Luther's works, the 54 volumes, that he indeed had said that, let him go get married and with the government and then show up at the doorsteps of the church and enter into worship and get married again, only this time with God's blessings.
So from a theological point of view, we could just summarize what we've said so far, that God does permit the government to indicate who does the official marriage act so it's recognized by the government. It doesn't stop pastors from congregations also doing marriages, but the grounds for being legal are things that the government sets up, such as maybe being a citizen of the country or a citizen of the state, or at least on the roster of a congregation or something along that line. And so a lot of us think that, therefore, and that's why you were very wise in what you said, that if pastors are no longer permitted to officiate at marriages because they refuse to do gay marriage. They still can do marriages in the church, but to make it legal, you're saying that the couple would need to go to the secular authorities.
Exactly. I would agree with you. And I think we're dealing with several kingdoms there. And as we started out at pretty much earlier in the show, we talked about that when it comes to the order of creation, that's where government belongs, governmental authority, and it's part of fallen creation. So how far are they going to fall away from God's orders?
Yes, I want to move towards that from a theological point of view, but just to explain the two kingdoms, you're talking about the temporal kingdom over which government, Romans 13, is in charge. Of course, God is in charge of both kingdoms. And then the spiritual kingdom, which finds its essence in John chapter 20, whosoever sins you remit, they are remitted. Whosoever sins you retain, they are retained. Is that the dichotomy you're speaking of?
Yep, you're right on target there.
So that the temple authorities do have some rights as to who can officiate and make a marriage legal, but they also, because of the separation between church and state, cannot insist that the church do things that are contrary to our doctrine.
Right, and I think you brought up a good point when you talked about Romans 13. We have a government, and we are to obey that government, but if that government leaves behind what God has said, we have to still go ahead and follow what God has to say in this instance. And in this instance, we wouldn't marry gay couples.
In fact, you do have a Bible verse there that we obey God rather than men.
Man, yeah.
I would like to make the point that there were a number of times in my ministry where I did not marry someone, even though they were members of the congregation. I'll just give you one small example, and there's three or four others. But the individual had gotten the girl pregnant and was told he had to marry her, and so that's why he was going through with a marriage. And when I had them together, I asked if they loved each other, and they didn't. And so I felt that that was inappropriate. We had more talks with them, and I said, I don't think I could do this marriage, because one of the vows you make is to love one another through thickness and thin and better or for worse. And they agreed, and so the marriage did not take place. So sometimes a pastor would say no to a marriage that a justice of the peace would have no problem with at all. And so we need to be sure that the government isn't going to come down insisting on doing things that are contrary to the word of God.
I would agree with you. I've had several similar like that, too, where I've had to ask couples to separate and not get married.
We're in a situation where, of course, many gay folks thought that they had won a tremendous victory, but as we're hearing more and more about the Supreme Court ruling, it's not as great a victory as you might have thought. For example, the lady yesterday was telling us about the fact that even in California, there's still work to do in order to legalize any gay marriage that might occur. And what I found really interesting in regard to the Supreme Court is they threw the case out because the people who were bringing a court case against gay marriage did not have the right to do so, they said. And I asked her, well, did the Supreme Court say who did have a right? And she said no. So that's something else we're going to be needing to look at to see whether or not that can be brought back to the Supreme Court with somebody who's got the right to do that.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I hadn't heard too much about that one.
So, getting into why God is contrary to gay marriage is because how did creation start off?
Yeah. You look at that whole creation process in Genesis 1 and 2, you get right down to the very basics. He created Adam after he created the rest of the world. And Adam had an intellect, as you can see, because he names all the animals as God brings them forth, and he begins to realize that he's all alone. And God causes a deep sleep. So Adam didn't create marriage. God creates it because God creates Adam.
Well said.
Or creates Eve, yeah. And then, after that, he brings them forth, and he gives that institution of marriage. And it's kind of interesting because that whole institution of marriage comes prior to the fall. It's God's gift.
Well, it's part of the orders of creation. Prior to marriage, a son would be under the authority of his parents. But listen to verse 24. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, Hebrew, that we're talking male or female here. And therefore, a fourth commandment about honoring and obeying your father and mother, you still honor them, but you no longer need to obey. You have a new relationship set up with your wife, and the two become one flesh. And never does it allow anywhere in the Bible for a man to a man or a woman to a woman.
Yeah. I mean, you see that in Timothy when it talks about the pastor being the husband of one wife. Not a husband of a husband.
Very good.
Husband of a man. You know, you see that in Ephesians 5, where it talks about the husband and the woman, the wife, when it comes to Christ and the church. It's all over the Bible that way.
Now, we know from the Bible that when people, such as the folks at the time of Noah's flood and Sodom and Gomorrah, disobeyed, God obliterated them. In another situation with the Tower of Babel, he did not obliterate them. He was merciful to them. He brought in new languages, so they had to split in order that he might continue the reign towards the coming of the Messiah. But this is important for us to understand. Some people are going to be expecting that once gay marriage takes place, there's going to be a lot of disasters occurring because of those relationships. Namely, that children are going to be growing up without either a mother or a father, and we know how bad that is, and other things. But I want to make a little point here that the negative consequences may or may not occur, because in Sodom and Gomorrah, it's clear that everybody was, you know, doing, like at the end of Judges, what was right in his own eyes. And the negative consequences have been kind of taken away. In other words, what you had was what they once thought was right, they now thought was wrong. Once they thought was wrong, they now thought was right. And that is the worst wrath that God can bring on a country. So I think because of the remnant of Christians left in the United States, and they're from some very strong ones, Southern Baptist, Roman Catholic in this issue, Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, that the first thing is going to happen where God is going to permit the natural kind of orders of creation to take place, and very negative things are going to start happening as gay marriage flourishes. In fact, I've often said that you're going to have a higher rate of suicide among gay people once this occurs for two reasons. The first is the natural negative consequences of sin are still in place according to the orders of creation, and people are going to have a bad conscience. And second of all, the church, and I know your church in Havana and ours here in St. Louis, we're not going to stop preaching against the abomination of homosexuality.
Yeah, I would agree. But wouldn't you also think, too, what's also naturally going to occur? I mean, you see these books written up about the rise and the fall of the Roman Empire, and one of the negative effects is that open sexuality and homosexual and all kinds of licentiousness that goes on in these societies.
Well, if they had a daughter, they would take the daughter into the wilderness and let her be devoured by animals because they didn't want to have a daughter.
Or the other thing that would happen is with the early Christians, they would go to the local Roman dump and pick up all these children that were deformed or daughters that were left there to die.
Hmm.
They'd take them in and adopt them. But a good book, How Christianity Changed the World, by Alvin Schmidt, he brings that out in that book.
Yeah, there's no doubt if you read Alvin Schmidt's book the Christian influence makes huge cultural changes in a country that did not have Christianity. One of the first things is the higher regard of women that takes place due to the Christian message. And, of course, the higher regard of children also. But that the opposite would occur or may not occur will depend on God. Because if he is in such wrath against the homosexual lifestyle, he may allow no negative consequences to occur that are real obvious because of his wrath like he had at Sodom and Gomorrah. Or if his wrath is going to be like that with the Babylonian captivity, he's going to bring people to their knees. And that's what I hope is going to occur, because I think he's got some real churches here to be able to do this.
You know, Luther, when it came to his Genesis lectures there, Genesis 3:9 said, "The Lord called to Adam and said to him, 'Where are you?'" Luther would go on to say, sin in itself is a withdrawal from God. And really, when he's asking him, how far are you going to withdraw? And when I started reading that, it goes, how far are we going to withdraw from God? Till finally he says, I've had enough and I'm going to bring the punishment. And that's what I hear you saying.
Okay, we've got a phone call here, and I think it's Eric from Pennsylvania. Can you hear me, Eric? Let me see. Okay, you're on.
Hello?
Hello, Eric. Go ahead.
Hi. Okay, yes. I had a question about the couple that you said that you wouldn't marry because they didn't love each other. My question is how did you define that love? Was it a lifelong commitment, or was it a warm, fuzzy feeling that they had, you know, in their gut? And I think that leads, you know, to the way that the couples nowadays perceive marriage as a warm, fuzzy feeling, you know, and it's not really a lifelong commitment. So that was my question.
You are so good, Eric, and in fact, that's a great point to make. It was definitely one of commitment. Are you willing to commit yourself to her and stop going out with your boyfriends and take care of her? And he says, no, not really. You know, I'll take care of the baby and this kind of thing. But there was not that commitment. In fact, she was actually having another boyfriend at that time.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
But Eric, you really hit that on the head. And wouldn't you agree with that, Wes, that true love is more commitment than feeling?
Absolutely. He's 100%. And that happened in one of my cases. I could hear her talk commitment, but I could hear him talking other things, and I said, I think we need to sit down and talk about this for a long time, and that split up the couple, because he didn't want to make the commitment.
Thank you very much, Eric. That was a great comment.
Thank you for clarifying.
Okay. Yeah, and please, we've got some great listeners out there, and a lot of times, especially we pastors, we can talk like an ivory tower, and we're not recognizing how we're coming across, or we don't explain everything more clearly. But I think that's a great point that Eric brought out. And
Absolutely.
Others can call. Our number here to call is 1-800-730-2727. I'm so new in the studio. That's the first time we've given out the number, I think, since I've been here Monday. So you got the first call, Wes, for Law and Gospel at the new studio. Any closing comments you would like to make about the ramifications of the Supreme Court ruling for the church?
I think when you said you were going to talk about order of creation, and I think you were really right on target. And one of the things we have to realize is that government belongs to the order of creation, not the order of salvation. So we're going to see sometimes how far from God's word they get. And I think it's really important that we get out there and evangelize. I think as Christians, as pastors, we need to get out there with the good news and bring our people around in that direction, that I don't think we're going to legislate or use a sword, you know, or power to get this changed around.
I think you're absolutely correct there, and there's no doubt about it that the church is going to have quite a struggle in the near future there, particularly with the various things that are coming against us.
Yeah.
I think we've got somebody else on the line here. Let me just see. Hi, you're on the air. Oh, okay. They've left. All righty.
We lost them.
Okay, yeah. Well, we're at the end anyway. We probably wouldn't have been able to. Okay, tell me about where you're preaching this Sunday.
I'm going to be down in San Antonio at the National Youth Gathering. I got this special guest speaker by the name of Tom Baker coming to St. Paul, Savannah on Saturday and Sunday.
I got to be there Saturday, too?
You betcha.
And it's a Bible study, what, at 5, followed by a worship service at 6?
Saturday, yeah.
And then
Sunday, 7:45 and 10:15 and 9 a.m. Bible class.
Yeah, 9 a.m. Bible class, and I'll be there Sunday in Havana. And how do you get to the church?
We're at the corner of Pearl and Market Street.
Yes.
And, we'll send you a map.
Yeah, I can Google it. You know, you forgot to tell about the High Festival that we're going to be having.
The High Festival?
Oh, yeah. I mean, right after the worship service on Saturday.
Oh, yes. You meet at the local eatery, one of the local eateries, and we begin to evangelize the whole restaurant.
Yes, I know, like we did last time. Oh, we had a lot of fun there. And you have a great time at the youth conference, and hopefully we'll be talking to you again next week, okay?
Yep, God bless.
Okay, you too. God bless. And I'm Tom Baker. Tomorrow is, well, Open Mic Friday. Till then, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.